Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Joe Salonia. Today, we have two guests here in person at the HRN studio here in Bushwick. We have Kat Piquet, who is the purchasing manager at Murray's Cheese, and we have Amelia Dalbero, who is the sales and marketing manager for Formaticum Professional Grade Cheese Storage and Serving Products. Both are astute, certified cheese professionals and have paved their own way in their careers as cheesemongers and beyond in a short span of time. Kat and Amelia, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having us.
You know, it is a pleasure to be here. We're in person, by the way. For those listening, it's not always the case. Sometimes we're recording remotely. So I'm so happy to have both of you here in person, in real life. And I wanted to...
IRL.
Yeah, IRL.
IRL.
So I want to know what you've both been up to. It's been so busy lately for everyone. Our listeners are buckling down. It's Q4. Thanksgiving weekend had just passed. We're in holiday madness mode. Kat, you work for Murray's in New York.
That is correct.
Okay. That's a distinction. For our friends listening, how would you describe Murray's Cheese to someone who may be new and just discovering cheese and maybe they've never even been to New York? What's your day-to-day role at Murray's, first of all?
First of all, day-to-day role. I guess as an overview of my role, I am the purchasing manager. So I oversee, we are in a special position where we direct import from France. So a large part of my job is spent overseeing those imports and just making sure it gets from Paris to New York. Mm. And that all comes as expected.
Okay.
No big deal.
Just get it from Paris to New York.
Easy.
Okay.
Easy.
Yeah. And then you're in the lead for that. For Murray's New York.
Yes.
That's pretty important.
You know, probably the most acquainted with the file system.
Okay. And the file system, for those who are listening, what is the file system?
So you get 52 files a year. Each file corresponds to a week. So file 52 is the last file of the year. Right now I am ordering for file 51, which will probably be arriving early, mid-January. And
so it's November 27th for those listening who may be listening at a later date. And now you're ordering cheese for middle of January for a highly perishable product. Some of it is highly perishable.
That will spend an undisclosed amount of time on the ocean.
And I'm sure it's not just like one or two cases. You're talking pretty serious amounts of cheese here. So that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. For January, I'd actually say those are the orders I'm the most nervous about because I'm not sure just how much we're going to have left over from the holidays and if we're going to sell through what I ordered for the holidays or if we're going to have a lot left over that I need to account for.
Your crystal ball batteries never really, they're never running well. So you can't depend on the crystal ball.
Feels like professional gambling sometimes.
Oh, right. It is professional gambling.
Yeah.
People don't realize how much of a delicate dance it is to
highly perishable
cheese.
Good. Yeah. It's coming in on a boat.
Yep.
It might be here when I think it's going to be here.
Or it might not be. And then you have to figure out what to do with it.
That's if everything goes well. There's no storms at sea. There's no strikes. There's not a big traffic jam at the port. It's just as everything's perfectly done.
Your sail time should be 10 days from Rungis to Newark.
Mm-hmm. Rungis being that big, giant French market in Paris where cheese is traded and organized for outbound orders, right?
There's a lot of variables and you have to make them all work in your favor to the best of your ability.
Right. So Amelia, you would order cheese, but in a different manner when you were a cheesemonger. But first, let's back up. I want to, because we do want to hear about that, but how would you explain for listeners, you're working for Formaticum now.
I am.
Formerly, your last position before this job was you were a lead cheesemonger at Green Grape.
Brooklyn. I was the cheese manager and buyer at Green Grape Provisions in Brooklyn.
And what is your role at Formaticum now?
So I'm the sales and marketing manager, which is a really big job. And there is definitely a learning curve coming from the counter, coming from a retail environment, but I'm having a really great time, learning a lot of new skills, and just really thrilled to be taking the next step in my career.
Wow. All right. So this is a big shift for you.
Definitely.
Whole different role. But you also are dealing with, do you have to deal with this time frame too? Or I mean,
Okay. Absolutely. So for those who don't know, Formaticum is a cheese, paper, and packaging company, and we are the company that is responsible for keeping all of your beautiful cheeses looking and tasting fresh behind the counter and also sometimes in your grab-and-goes. And if you weren't aware, most of our product does come from overseas. So we're getting a lot of paper from France and Italy and Germany. Okay. We also sell knives and other packaging products. So just like we are dealing with any type of delays or like importing problems and congestion and things like that. With cheese, we're dealing with the same things with paper because they're all on containers. They're all making it. They'll get here eventually. We're all literally in the same boat. It's been my favorite phrase.
Yeah, it really does apply.
Then that was part of the job that was actually really appealing to me because I've always been fascinated with logistics. So this was definitely a good opportunity for me to kind of dip my toe into that proverbial sea.
Logistics is such a massive thing. So even though maybe you're at this point in time in your current role, Amelia, you're not dealing with the perishable element. But you're familiar enough and sensitive to it that, you know, but your product actually can help maybe extend the
life,
at least for the consumer, or maybe, you know, for the cheese counter,
absolutely,
et cetera, how cheese care. Which is part of the theme I want to get into. I want to get into a kind of an overarching theme of cheesemongers' influence in general on the topics we're going to, just a few topics in the short time that we're here today, get into. But, you know, what the role of a cheese professional plays in, even, for instance, like the cheese life cycle and understanding the logistics, which is a major part. You know, is cheese care the biggest part, or feeling a responsibility to cheesemakers the vital part? So, Amelia, now that you're working for a company that sells cheese wrap, made to extend the cheese's life, what do you think? Or is that what inspired the creation of the company Formaticum? Or how has the passion for cheese influenced this company?
So the company was founded by Mark Goldman. And he had spent a little bit of time working in cheese in the United States and then traveled to France and saw that the cheese culture there was so different than what was happening here in the United States. And one of the things he noticed was that they were using professional cheese paper and other types of packaging to really preserve the life and the flavor and the freshness of the cheeses. So that is what inspired him to start importing those products here in the United States and basically sharing that part of European cheese culture with the United States and giving the shops in the country access to that part of it. Right now, for me, I'm really excited to be working with this company because if you know me or you knew me and in the Green Grape, something that I always prided myself on was having cheese in my case that was always in great condition. I was taking care of it on a daily basis. Cheese care is something that sometimes can be a little bit of an afterthought for some mongers. And it really can't be because, as we all know, cheese is a living product. So it is something that really needs to be babied. I always joke that my cheeses, in my case, are the closest thing I'll ever have to real children. sorry, Mom. So that was something that I was always really fascinated with. I always used Formaticum products at the Green Grape. And when the opportunity for this job came along, I really jumped on it because it's an educational opportunity as well. What we're doing is we are committed to educating consumers and also cheese professionals about the benefits of making small changes, like using professional cheese paper or using our cheese storage bags in your own home and how that can help positively affect your cheese. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it really goes deeper than that. Cheesemongering is a really big job. And it's a lot bigger than some cheesemongers realize, especially if you're just getting started in the industry. When you really take a look at the big picture, it is, how do I say this, like, in a way that isn't very dramatic? You as a cheesemonger are the mouthpiece and the steward and the storyteller for these cheesemakers and these affineurs who have been making these cheeses to support their families and their local economies sometimes for hundreds of years. And sometimes we don't really think about that. And to think about the effect that we have and the role that we play in the life cycle of these cheeses on a larger scale is incredibly humbling. And something that gets overlooked a lot of the time is we're going to sell the cheese at our counter. We're going to send it home with the customer and that's it. We're done here. And what we're doing with Formaticum paper is we are preserving the flavor of that cheese for when the customer actually gets to it. Because sometimes they don't eat it right away. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to eat some of it and they're not going to finish it, you know, in within the first day of them buying it. So we want to make sure that anytime your customer is eating that cheese, they're tasting it in peak condition. And that is doing a service to every person who had their hands on that cheese in every part of the process, from milking the cow to cleaning the vat to aging the cheese to building the pallets to delivering the cheese to the cheese shops. Every single person in this cycle is as important as the next. And preserving the flavor is a way to honor every single person who put in that hard work.
Just something so simple as getting the cheese wrapped well with the right product. Kat, mm-hmm. you were a cheesemonger right before this role, not too long before this role. And you were at two spots, Bedford Cheese and ABC Cheese Co.
So I worked at Bedford and Alphabet City Beer Co.
Okay. And did you have access to Formaticum then? Was cheese care emphasized in those shops?
Formaticum was one of my favorite things to sell when I was at Bedford and doing a cut to order, because it was just such an easy thing to sell to customers. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice way of kind of extending that professional influence into the home of
a
customer.
That's a good point right there. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because people would always ask, hey, how long is this going to last in my fridge? And you have that moment of, well, if you wrap it in Saran wrap, it'll last, you know, a week or so, depending on the cheese. But if you have, you know, these special papers or bags, you can really extend that lifetime and you can buy a little bit more. I mean, my advice was always buy as little as you need for that moment and just buy frequently.
Buy less cheese more often.
Yeah. Wouldn't that definitely be nice?
But especially, you know, when COVID happened and I was working behind the counter, people were coming in and buying cheese like it was the end of days. And it kind of was.
Yeah.
I don't know if cheese would have been my priority in that situation as a customer.
Because they were drinking maybe something fun with it too, right? Yeah. Or just they didn't have to cook and it was like kind of a quick meal with some bread and fruit.
Yeah.
And
but it was a good way to kind of help a really common question that I got was cheese care.
Yeah. I love that question you get. How long is this good for? I mean, I know what they mean when they ask it.
Yeah.
I want to say, hey, in my house, it wouldn't be 45 minutes. I'd eat that thing in a night. And they're like, no, I mean, I want to try to make it last as long as possible and just eat 4 bites a day.
Yeah.
Can it go 17 to 21 days? Like, my that's kind of what they want to know.
You know, can I freeze this? And I'm like, please don't.
Please
I'm
don't
begging
do
you.
Gosh. But it's such a common question and it's innocently
really
asked.
Is. It's like the number 2 question you get asked at cheese counters.
That and what do you have that's sharp?
Yeah. Is this a brie?
Sharp. Yeah, sharp. Yeah, my Uncle Louie, everything is about sharp cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Joey, give me something sharp, something with flavor. No, nothing with
ghosts. Do we have the same uncle?
I think so. Does he have a son named Frankie? My cousin Frankie, my Uncle Louie.
Listen, I'm Italian-American. I have like 15 Frankies in my family.
Cousin Frankie. We're going to talk about Cousin Frankie if we get to it when it comes to you know, what he likes to eat. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree with Uncle Louie.
I just want to bring it back
for
a minute. What I tell people, aside from all of that like very romantic stuff that I was talking about honoring the cheesemakers, when it comes down to it, you can tell a story as much as you want. You can tell their stories until your lips fall off. But if your cheese does not look and taste good, you are either not going to make that sale or you're not going to have repeat business. Like, at the end of the day, if the cheese tastes good, that's what's going to get that customer to come back into your store. That's our main goal, right? Is to create repeat business.
You want to do justice to the cheese.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sell it as it was intended to be consumed.
Exactly. Yeah. And the more the customer comes back to buy cheese, it's good for you and it's good for the cheesemaker. So yeah.
Velocity. Good velocity on cheese is also at the counter. It will also make it taste better because you're into your next piece quicker.
Absolutely.
Right? So if something hangs out too long because of slow movement, then that is a concern. And sometimes that's controlled either by mongering it or pricing it right or marketing. There's so many factors. But ultimately, I'd like to think the cheesemonger can influence the velocity. Absolutely. I always believe that. That's what cheesemongering is. This gets back to some of the tenets I'm trying to, we want to touch on here, the cheesemonger's influence. But I want to even pull the lens back a little bit more. You've both now been in cheese for, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you've both been in cheese around the same amount of time, 6-7 years and counting.
Somewhere around there,
fair to say? And you've come so far in that, I think that's a short span of time, personally, in that time. So, but... What do you wish you knew before you got into the industry? Kat, we'll go to you first on that one.
Huh. You know, there's not a lot of things that I look back on in the early days of when I was working in cheese where I'm like, I wish I did that differently. I got into cheese because I got out of something else, which was planning to, be a lawyer. And so honestly, I was just kind of shooting from the hip in the early days and just kind of, I got into it because I wanted to do something I cared about and that I felt passionately about. And I kind of just let that guide me. And so I'd say, for anyone getting into it, if you're in it for the right reasons, I don't know who's in it for wrong reasons. I don't know what reasons, you're in it for the money.
You can't just do it for the money.
You sell out.
Yeah.
Amelia and I were talking about this fearlessly, being friendly.
That's a nice alliteration even too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fearless friendliness.
Yeah.
It never hurts to leave a good impression on someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even if you feel, even if you think it's cringe to just go up to someone and say hi, it's not cringe. It's only cringe until it works, or it's only cringe if you think it's cringe. But at the worst case scenario, you go up and you're friendly to someone and they're going to walk away and be like, oh, that person was friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the takeaway.
There were definitely some moments in the beginning where I was like, oh, do I want to go say hi to that person? Like, they're so cool. Yeah, say hi to them.
You can mess up a lot if you're friendly.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to get a lot of forgiveness in that process.
You're going to be a jerk.
Yeah, this people is what I don't understand. And sometimes I'll go into some stores and, hey, it's hard. Let's face it, okay? Let's the day-to-day, there's a lot of work to be done. But to attach unfriendliness into the mix, you're just – only making it more difficult for yourself, I think, in the end.
I always really prided myself on if I'm having a bad day, that's not going to affect my work. If I work with you and I'm having a bad day, that's my issue. I'm not going to make it your bad day as well. It's that sort of toxic bad energy. If anything, I'm just going to be a little less friendly than usual, but still friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something I tell younger mongers who are just starting out, something I tell them a lot is this is a very tight-knit industry, and it's a very small industry. And people probably won't remember that you can name every adjunct culture alphabetically, but they are going to remember if you had a positive attitude, what your work ethic is like, how often you are willing to help other people, things like that. Those things are what's going to set you apart and what people will remember and what your potential employers and future coworkers will remember about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much of it is, it connects to your attitude and your willingness, but it all still comes down to taking care of the cheese. If you can take care of the cheese, you're going to be more confident in your sale and what you're talking about. If you invest time into the cheese, get to know the producer, understand it, become the extension of that story and connect it to the customer. These are sometimes very much easier said than done when you're receiving orders, you have a lot of work to do. Sometimes you just, I see folks in stores, they're just trying, sometimes they just have too much work to do than do all the things we're talking about here in this room. But, But getting back even, Kat, to where you're purchasing. Now you're purchasing, pallets of perishable cheese. You're supplying near New York City's Murray's counters. You're also considering online business sales. Maybe you're measuring. I'm gonna guess some of this cheese even goes into some restaurants because Murray's sells to the restaurant trade, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I guess there's some algorithm where you're measuring that, but this doesn't include Murray's Kroger, correct?
No, we
it's
are
a whole different arm.
Whole different arm.
And the reason I bring this up is because I want our listeners to understand that when they hear Murray's, it doesn't always mean Murray's Kroger. It's so I'm sure there's a distinctive difference between Murray's New York City and Murray's Kroger. But for those listening who may not already know what the difference is, what is the story behind the partnership between Murray's and Kroger? How would you just simply set the difference?
So I've been with Murray's for roughly 2 years. So I've been with Murray's post Kroger.
Okay.
Or I guess current Kroger prior to when they integrated.
Okay.
And I've been with the company for, just a really brief part of its long existence. Basically, I'm not sure the exact year. I think it was 2012 or so. Kroger was really interested in bringing in sort of a specialty cheese experience for its customers. And they tested it out by bringing us into a few select stores. Funny how it worked. American consumers were really, really ready for specialty cheese. And so the relationship grew. We're in over, 1,100 stores nationwide now. And in the beginning, nobody really knew that it was going to expand the way that it did. And it puts us in a really special position to make artisan cheese and trained cheese professionals accessible to more people around the country in a way that's really cool that I can't think of anything else that's comparable. After a while, it seemed just like a very natural union for the two, seeing how successful it was. And they joined together, 2017. And they've been, Kroger, Father Kroger, as I call it. We've been together for over a dozen years now.
Wow. And I'm sure in those stores, I haven't been to more than a few over the years, but what I did notice is cheese was in good condition. Mm-hmm. So all this, again, comes back down to, taking care of the cheese and the cheese professionals at those stores, having an influence on the cheese's life cycle is going to have a net result to mm-hmm. what the experience for the consumer is and then the experience for enjoying that cheese. But is it fair to say that if we see you walking around the fancy food show, don't ask any questions to Kat about Kroger?
Well,
leave Kat alone.
Fancy New York food City, show, they did put Kroger on our badges. So a lot of people were coming up and they're like, hey, can you ask Rebecca why she hasn't gotten back to me? I'm like, I don't know. Please just let, I'm not important. Just please leave me alone.
You're Murray's New York, though, is the point.
Yeah,
and there's
a
difference. You operate separately, though.
Yes.
Your
so Kroger has their whole, category managers. I believe Brian Bland manages the specialty cheese and meat category.
Right. So it's a whole different thing. But it all connects back to how cheesemonger and cheese professional are influencing the life cycle of the cheese. They might even be setting trends, which is something I want to get into next in the second part of our show. So let's just put a pin in that. We're going to need to take a short break, and then I want to dig more into those topics right after a message from our sponsor.
This episode is supported by HRN business member selected by Will Studd. Will Studd is the host of Cheese Slices, a unique documentary series about artisan cheese. Over 62 episodes filmed across 20 countries over 2 decades are a fabulous resource for anyone who loves cheese. Visit willstudd.com, that's willstudd.com, to learn more and to see the hand-selected special range of quality cheeses from Europe. Selected by Will Studd supports HRN's creative, educational reporting and storytelling that drive conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to let you know that Heritage Radio Network's Julia Child Fellowship application is now open. The fellowship offers an enriching experience for aspiring food writers and journalists who share our passion for food systems change. The fellowship is a great way to progress in the field of food journalism and digital media, and will start in early January 2024. This fellowship will provide participants with hands-on experience, mentorship, and access to an extensive network of industry professionals. The application deadline is November 27, 2023. Check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on the Julia Child Foundation Writing Fellowship link to learn more. If you or someone you know has interest in food studies and journalism, this might be a great fit. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and check out the application today. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. We're here at the HRN studio with Kat Piquet and Amelia DeBarro here on Cutting the Curd in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in person. Okay, question for you both. What do you think is the biggest shift you've seen in cheese pre-pandemic versus now? Well, we'll call it post-pandemic. I find myself saying since the pandemic. I think hopefully, I know there's some new viruses on the rise.
That's that time
but
of year.
But I'm still going to call
it's in
it
season.
Post, yeah, post-pandemic. You know, what do you think is the biggest shift you've seen? Amelia, you've been pre, during, you had the, from the face mask, you had your yep. ears bruised, you've been quoted about it. Let's go to you first on that. You've seen it all. You were in the heart of it.
Yeah, so
what do you see here? What's the biggest shift?
So I was working behind the counter at Green Grape when, in March of 2020. And I think what we saw that was the biggest shift is that people weren't going out to eat. They weren't spending money on that. They were staying at home and they had to cook for themselves and they had to figure out how to feed themselves without the assistance of the people who worked in professional kitchens, which for some people apparently was a new thing. Not for me. Mm-hmm. But what we saw was that people were craving some sort of comfort, and they were craving some sort of little treat, let's call it.
Like there was like
there was a
trend going around about the little treat. And so people had a little bit more money to spend because they weren't eating out all the time. And they also had access to more knowledge than they
had. More free time to learn.
Yeah, they had more free time to learn, but they also had more access to knowledge about specialty food than they had in the past, because concurrently what was happening was the explosion of the charcuterie board trend on the internet. And there were a lot of different viral recipes involving cheese that were happening at that point.
Yeah.
And so
like
the feta
tomatoes.
Oh my god. I sold, I think
that was
six,
my Vietnam War.
Yeah, I sold six times more feta in that like 2 week period than I would have otherwise. Yeah. I looked at the numbers. That was absolutely insane.
I never made that. You ever make that?
No.
I actually never made it.
I mean, I've roasted tomatoes. You know, I made tomato sauce.
It was delicious, I was working like 16 hours a day.
I kind of could appreciate I could kind of appreciate why.
It's inoffensive. Like, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the videos, I'm like, that's okay, you know? Like,
I've seen worse on the internet.
I've seen way worse things.
Way worse.
But basically what was happening is people had money to spend and they had time to kill. And they were learning more about different artisan cheeses and charcuterie on the internet because the charcuterie trend was in full effect. Yeah. And so what I personally saw working the counter for 8, 10, 12 hours a day is that people were willing to try new things and they were willing to splurge on things in pursuit of that feeling of comfort in the home. And that also opened up the conversation between cheesemonger and consumer, which was awesome because people had time to spend with us tasting new cheeses, hearing us tell the stories, asking us questions that they may not have had the time or the desire to ask previously.
Yeah.
And that created new favorites. And so a lot of my customers and my regulars, the old regulars and new regulars that I created during the pandemic, they now have a new appreciation for artisan cheese. And they understand that it's absolutely worth the money. And you know, something I like to say is you vote with your dollar. Mm-hmm. So spending a little bit of extra money on real deal Gruyere is ultimately going to be beneficial to the consumer. It's going to be beneficial to the small businesses that you buy it from. It's going to be beneficial to people like you, people like Gormino, And it's going to be beneficial to the cheesemakers. Mm-hmm. So there's really no downside to buying something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of the conversation that I was able to have behind the counter with these people who we had people that were coming from New Jersey to buy cheese from us. And we also had an e-com site that launched during the pandemic. So it really extended the reach of cheesemongers. I know that there were some business that had like a phone-a-monger line.
Oh, where, right. Yes,
yeah. I forget that. Who that yeah. was. If it was you, I love that idea.
Was it Kurtz & Co.?
Maybe, yeah. And where you could like call up and talk to a cheesemonger and ask all of your burning questions. Yeah. And I loved that idea. So
yeah, I mean, that's just a great idea in general.
It's a great idea.
Like a kind of cheese concierge-y kind of helper, you know, hotline.
If you're American Express Platinum, you can get access to a 24/7 cheese con.
That should be one of the perks for one of those Platinum cards.
It was definitely the silver lining to an otherwise absolutely horrible situation. Yeah. And I'm not trying to minimize how bad it really was.
No, we had to have some kind of little reward at the end of our dark days.
A little treat. That's what it comes down to. It was a little treat.
Yeah.
A little treat with big benefits.
And so do you think that carried through then? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Is that the shift that is now? So now we're still talking about charcuterie boards, and this is kind of how it was really emphasized and kind of became a bigger deal. Kat, does any of that resonate? You see it different? Because you were with Murray's during this time, right?
No. I started Murray's January 22.
Oh, January 22. Okay. So you still feel, you still must have a sense of some kind of lasting effect.
Yeah. I would agree. I think consumers have become a lot more conscious of where they want their money to go. You could spend it on the Gruyere from Wisconsin, or you could spend it on Gruyere from Joe.
Okay.
Hey, Gruyere from Wisconsin is
Gruyere
still AOP. Great.
Yes.
Yeah. No, Gruyere from Wisconsin.
I'm not knocking Gruyere from Wisconsin.
Let's just make the distinction. Le Gruyere AOP is what we're talking about.
Gruyere style, we should say.
Yeah, that's the authentic from Switzerland, Western Switzerland. Le Gruyere AOP. Let the consumer hear it, at least.
I mean, for me personally, I switched over from, grocery shopping whenever I just needed groceries to going to the farmer's market every single week and getting, if not all of my groceries from the farmer's market, at least 80-90% of them. Just because it was a more enjoyable experience than waiting online for the Whole Foods to go inside of it.
Absolutely.
And that habit has stuck with me. I still, love. I go to the farmer's market now 2 times a week. God. And
I love seeing your big vegetables posts.
I have so many vegetables.
Yeah, you do. You buy some pretty colossal sized vegetables.
Every time I see a big vegetable, I think of you.
But a big carrot, I can't say no. I mean, I got a carrot. I got a carrot last year that was 2.5 pounds.
That's a big carrot.
One carrot, single carrot.
I treated it like a pot roast.
Yeah.
But I mean, nice. I've seen that carry over for myself.
Like an ossobuco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was just saying I've become more conscious. It's more enjoyable to buy from an artisan cheese shop, to buy from a farmer's market, to buy from whole animal butchery establishment.
Yeah.
And
I would think any shop that sold produce, cheese, and butchery was killing it, right? Mm-hmm. And then
Rip, it was like the day before Thanksgiving every single day for like a solid 2 months.
Wow.
It was absolutely wild.
I think that for me personally, and I don't think I'm unique, that's carried over for me. I'm a little more picky about buying the meat from the butcher now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that carried over for me.
You live in my neighborhood now. We have the same butcher shop now.
Yeah, that's right. So that's hopefully meaning that there's some small trend going back to the mom and pop butcher shop, independent grocer, independent cheese shop, basically independent business.
People are definitely shopping and more importantly, eating with intention these days.
Yeah.
That's probably a better way to put it over.
Yeah.
An umbrella
I think I've been a lot more intentional about my buying habits.
Yes.
And if it's just, if you could connect good dots, if it's good, and if it's flavorful and you can kind of draw a line to who made it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Traceability is a huge thing these days.
So do we see a trend here? Like what's the trend you see happening? Kat, is it charcuterie boards? Is it, what's the takeaway for you? Is it, cause I have a lot of I have an opinion about charcuterie boards personally, but like, what do you?
I mean, trends for me, especially since the pandemic, I've noticed a lot of stuff has been more content focused. Mm-hmm. So if it looks good in a picture or it's a fun little video that comes together, regardless of how good the outcome is.
A lot of stunt food happens. Yes.
Yeah, cheese porn. Yeah. Cheese porn. Kind of idea.
Like,
are you allowed to say that?
Yeah, we're all right. That's like PG-13. I think we could say it.
You know, that's been an interesting shift because I think it's great. It's exposing a lot more people to cheese that they have to seek out from specialty, you know, grocers. On the other hand, I can't curse.
I don't know. I don't know the rules. You just go for it. They'll edit it out if it's a problem.
What the fuck is a whipped brie? Are you kidding me?
Whipped brie, huh?
Why?
Yeah, why? Good runny brie is all you need. Why do you got to whip it?
Yeah, I mean, the brie was doing just fine.
We still have a lot of work to do in terms of cheese education. We have come a long way, and we've been fighting the good fight, but clearly we still have some work to do.
Well, I report those videos, and that's me fighting the good fight. No, I don't.
We mentioned charcuterie boards. This word has been hijacked.
Yeah.
Like, I went to culinary school, depending on your vernacular. I went to culinary school a long time ago. Charcuterie was a class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a French word.
Cured meats.
Yeah, it was a word where you learn how to make force meats. You'd cure duck breast. You'd make sausage. You'd make pate and croute. It was nothing but meat.
Yeah.
It has turned into where you can have gingerbread cookies and gumdrops on a board and call it a cheese charcuterie.
This is a hot topic, Joe.
Yeah,
we need to have an entire episode just about debating.
We do. That could be an episode unto itself. But and I want you to expound on this. I want to hear if this resonates with you. My wish is that the charcuterie board would be broken out, meaning, because charcuterie board forces you to think about who's coming to my party and who don't I want to offend with this really stinky cheese that I love and I know is amazing, but I can't get it because cousin Frankie, who's Uncle Louie's son, likes cheese. He eats more than the sharp provolone that my Uncle Louie eats. But he might only go as far as some big brands with the soft, runny cheeses. Meanwhile, you got this beautiful, funky cheese from just name anywhere, USA or France or Italy, wherever. And now you're worried about how am I going to compose this board with five cheeses that get along under this kind of preempted umbrella, trying to please people like cousin Frankie. Meanwhile, you do each cheese on its own plate, maybe with checkered cuts. Make it look like its own, beautiful orchestration of, like when you see the Iberico ham going in a spiral, this beautiful, what do you call it?
Let them all shine individually.
Yeah,
I think asking Uncle Louie to do dressage is asking a lot.
But Uncle Louie just loves food. Uncle Louie will stuff anything in his pie hole. Don't forget, Uncle Louie will eat anything.
Have the same family members?
Yeah, as long as he doesn't have to buy it. See, Uncle Louie's easy to please, actually.
Do you also have an Uncle Tony?
No, I don't have an Uncle Tony. I don't, actually. But Cousin Frankie's, between Uncle Louie and Cousin Frankie, that's a lot. But I'm saying this cheese that might be challenging, unique, funky, could be on its own plate. You want it to run. You can't let it run on the charcuterie board the cheese and charcuterie board, I'll call it, where it's sharing space with nuts, crackers, salumi, right? But on its own board, you can let it run all over the place. Put some crackers in your own composed accompaniment and be like, yo, that's the way it's supposed to be over there. It's supposed to be running all over the place on its own plate. Everybody dig in and they go bananas. I want that to be.
Really?
I mean, I've seen it. I'm not making it up. It exists, but I want it to be more mainstream.
I mean, for me with my boards, I've been taking a step back. I used to go all out on just about every board I made. It was like, what do I have in the pantry? How do I build a full charcuterie board that me and my partner will not finish eating because it's two of us and I'm building a crazy board? I've taken a step back and it's now just been really simple.
And
it has been just not putting a jam for the sake of having a jam to take up space, but putting a jam with the intention of it's going to taste good with this. I have it. It's going to taste good with the cheese I'm putting out. And if I don't have a jam that's going to work, I'm just not putting out a jam.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to keep everything on the board, and especially when I'm hosting, I like to keep it all together. Just I don't want the applause to feel left out. And I think it looks also more inviting for people who may not otherwise be interested in trying something that's a little bit out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. You know, if they mm-hmm. see it all together, they're try A, B, C. Mm. Oh, well, now I got to try D. And they might love it. Who knows?
I see.
A big part of it, I think, is knowing your audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Or and you know, you as hosts, you have to kind of, I guess, express yourself. And there's only so far you'll go. Like you said, your audience, you know what you can get away with.
Yeah.
The cheese board that I make at home with my partner, who also works in cheese, is going to be infinitely different than the cheese board that I make for Thanksgiving at my mom's house. Because yes. I know what she likes and I know how adventurous she is. Knowing your audience is a really big part of hosting and serving, and also salesmanship behind the counter. You have to know how to talk to people in order to make that sale. And some people want a lot of nitty gritty information, and some people are intimidated by that. And a good salesperson knows how to tell the difference and how to pivot.
Yeah. I still go back to, I'd love to see it separate, because you know, you can play it still, in my opinion, play it safe. If you have a stinky, crazy, runny cheese, it's on some plate. Cousin Frankie, he's scared of it. He doesn't have to worry about it. He can still go to the firm cheese that's in a spiral on a plate and then hit the fig jam that's over and is stuffed inside of an apple or something.
What you're miscalculating is that I care about Cousin Frankie.
There you go. Okay.
But also, I have a hot take. And my take is, it's hot to some and lukewarm to others. Uh-huh. And my take is that I don't care what my customer does with the cheese after they have purchased it from me. It is not my place to judge how someone enjoys eating food
if
and
you
how
enjoy
someone
it.
Chooses to like feed themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that there's definitely opportunities for us as cheese professionals to educate people on like traditional uses and the history of these cheeses and things like that. But at the end of the day, every cheese is a gateway cheese if you know how to interact with your customer. And even though they're buying, you know, they might be buying a mass produced like commodity cheese today to make, I don't know, brie butter or a charcuterie chalet or something that I don't personally find particularly appealing, they are still spending their money on cheese. And that's an opportunity the next time they come into your shop to say, hey, how did you like that? If you liked this, here's something else you might enjoy. Or what didn't you like about it? Let's try something else.
That's kind.
It's always an educational opportunity for me personally, and an opportunity to connect with your customer and help them connect with different cheeses. And at the end of the day, they're spending their money on cheese, which that's really what matters. They're spending their money on cheese in your establishment, which, as we talked about before, goes directly back to where we want it to go.
I've had people tell me some of the most out of bounds things that they have done with their cheeses. And the whole time I'm sitting there like, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. And then they finish it up with, and it was so good. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Yeah.
They're happy is the point.
You're happy, I'm happy.
I'm happy, you're happy.
Yeah, and I guess there's only so far you can go, because we want to maybe, like we talked about influence, how much can you influence?
And my opinion is not law.
Right. I don't
condone. It's well-informed, but.
Yeah, you give them information, let them make their own.
If they like it, they like it. I don't condone elitism in the cheese industry. Yeah. I think it's weird and gross, and if you do it, then I don't like you.
Yeah. And a no judgment zone is important with who buys what, how.
Exactly.
Because we're all in the same
They're still boat. Eating cheese. That's what we want them to do.
Sometimes you got to color outside the lines.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I've done some weird pairings. I did a collaboration with Frito-Lay.
I remember that. And did you ever do that crap?
I dipped Flamin' Hot Cheetos in Harbison. And guess what? It was not delicious. But some people thought it was delicious. I didn't personally like it. But
because it was just too spicy, or you didn't think it went well?
I just didn't like it because it was too spicy. Yeah. I can't do spicy. I too wish I were different. I'm so sorry. but the whole point of the video is that cheese pairings don't have to be.
No one's going to arrest you.
Exactly. They don't have to be some like fancy like brambleberry $14 jar
traditionally
of jam
done
that was,
in
like,
France
made from the morning dew of unicorns or whatever. Like if it tastes good together and you like it,
great.
That's
perfect.
A good pairing.
That's
for you.
That's the end game right there.
One of my main goals as a monger and an educator is to make everyone feel comfortable and make everyone feel welcome.
Yeah.
Because cheese is for everyone.
Yeah. I like that. And at home, folks buying cheese, maybe that's the way of expressing their the extent of what they can pull off in composing something. Making a cheese board or a salumi board is a way of expressing their food kind of artistic palate. You know.
I love a high-low pairing. Listen, I have eaten 5-year Parmigiano wrapped in like thinly sliced culatello. I also dip Nathan's hot dogs in Rush Creek Reserve.
Yeah.
That sounds so good.
I will die on that hill. I will not be shamed.
I like that. I would eat that.
It's totally delicious. I have one in my fridge. Let's do that.
Let's make that happen.
Yeah.
Switching gears quickly. What are your proudest moments? Because you've been in cheese now 6-7 years. You're in new roles, but I think the audience likes to hear these kind of questions. What are your proudest moments behind the cheese counter? Kat, we'll go to you first.
I was thinking about this one. I did a photo shoot with Anthropology. That was really, really cool. It was basically no budget. Pick out a ton of cheeses that you really love. And I got to put a lot of really cool cheesemakers into the Anthropology catalog. That was a really cool experience.
Anthropology is a home style brand store.
Clothing, home goods, a lot of candles.
Yeah, okay. Real clean, beautiful looking store, though, from what
they
I remember.
They have a viral mirror.
They do. It's they like have a viral lot.
$500 mirror.
that
what did
was
you
really
present it? Was it like a photo shoot that you presented on a table?
Yeah, so they wanted to display that season's like homeware collection with cheeses. So cool. They had two cheese professionals. And I got to just pick out some cheeses and then advise on how to photo. I was with them the day of the shoot, advise on how to photograph them, how to pair them. And it was just really,
so you
really
have an
cool.
aesthetic eye, obviously.
I know it looks
even
good.
In your normal posts, I notice that when you post about food, you're cooking something, it's just not just your average take the iPhone out and shoot a pic. You definitely have a food styling.
You gotta, it's good food. I want it to look good in the picture, you know?
Yeah.
Eyes feast first.
That's true. Phone eats first.
And another one, I'd say my CCP, I recently got certified. That was just glad I didn't.
Yeah, get that under the belt.
That felt good getting under the belt. And then my last thing I think I'm most proud of is honestly, it's been less than 10 years, but during the pandemic, it was really challenging and I had a real struggle with faith in working in cheese. I felt really burnt out. I had been having just a hard time. And now I'm really, really happy with where I'm at. I love this job. I couldn't imagine having any other job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just being able to kind of work through it and fight through it and hold on to something I feel so passionately about and now be in a position where I can do the work that I've always wanted to do. So I'm really proud of that.
You followed your gut and your passions. You fought through it.
Well, my gut said sell out and just get a finance job. But
right. Your background was
law.
Right. And then you changed your course based on your passion and interest.
Yeah, hard right turn.
Yeah. That's really something to note that listeners may not know. You went to school really with a different intention.
Yeah.
And then you just noticed you loved food and just thought, hey, this could maybe be something. Let me check this out. And here you are 7 years later. Amelia, what's your proudest moment at the counter?
Ooh. So most recently, probably the coolest thing that I've ever done cheese related was I was selected to work in Giorgio Crivero's booth at Cheese and Bra this year. So I spent 4 days.
Now, Bra, let's for the listeners who may not know, this is we're talking about Italy.
Yes. So,
a booth in Italy and this massive cheese festival.
Yes. So the biggest cheese festival in the world is held biannually in Bra in Piemonte in Italy. And I worked with, along with Brian McMillan, who is a wonderful human being. We worked.
Shout out to Brian.
Shout out to Brian McMillan.
Down in Alabama.
So we spent a few days working the booth with Giorgio Crivero and his team and his wonderful family, just cutting cheese. We cut about 1,200 pounds of Parm with only Parm knives. I just want to specify.
Oh, wow. No wires in that booth.
No wires.
And Giorgio Rivera.
No double handle knives.
He's an affineur. Yes. How would you describe Giorgio Rivera?
So Giorgio is what is known in Italy as a stagionatore, which is...
pronunciation.
Yeah, you got a great Italian. Well, you speak...
For anyone who doesn't know, my college degree is in Italian studies with a concentration in translation. So that's what I was doing before I got into cheese. So,
hey, no big deal.
No. So this opportunity really felt like a very cool culmination of the two things that I have the most passion for professionally, which was Italian language and culture and food specifically, and cheesemongering. So it was so absolutely amazing to be able to be involved in this festival and be representing my favorite cheese, and in particular, my favorite maker, technically. Stagionatore is the Italian word. It's not technically an affineur, but it refers to someone who cares for the cheeses through the seasons makes sure that whatever that season brings, they are taking care of the cheese accordingly.
It's a beautiful word. I hope it gets used more. I don't hear it that much.
Yeah, I hope so.
That's
I think
no
that
one can pronounce it. I'm not going to say that.
Say it one more time.
Stagionatore.
Yeah.
I think that
Jewel
actually sent out an email with more information about it recently, so I'm hoping that gets picked up. But that was a very, very cool moment because I was cheesemongering, but in Italian, in the metric system.
With a 2 euro coin. They had a 2 euro coin over there, too. They're paying cash a lot of times. You're selling direct to...
Yep.
Consumers. You're in a booth. For those who may not know, you're in a booth. It's a festival. It's a big, giant food festival.
It's hot.
On the streets.
It's raining.
You're on asphalt. There's no mats.
No mats.
It's subject to whatever weather or temperature gets thrown your way. That's it. You're
exactly.
in there. You're in the booth. You have a roof, but that's it.
Yep.
And if it's hot, if it's cold, if it's rainy, that's it. Too bad. And then you're dealing with people just coming up to you.
Yep.
In Italian,
just
usually.
Thousands and thousands of people. Exactly.
And then they're throwing 20 euros at you and you might not have change.
I have to do math in my head in euro, in Italian.
Yeah, the way it prices.
In the metric system.
Yeah, move the cheese, get it sold. And meanwhile, you're cracking open wheels in the booth.
Yes, and for anyone who doesn't know, Giorgio's wheels are significantly heavier than some other wheels of Parm
you
might encounter.
80?
They
85?
Generally hover around like 90 to 100 pounds.
Oh, wow.
So Brian and I were just kind of hauling those around and breaking them open. And I think perhaps my proudest moment in cheese is when we were situated right next to the Gufanti booth. Was when one of the guys from Gufanti was watching me break down a wheel of Parm, and he started recording it and saying, "Wow, you're really good at that."
Hey,
and I was like, "The Gufanti guy likes my technique."
Another great.
I've done my job. I've done my job here. So
in your natural habitat, right?
That was very cool because it was a huge challenge, and I learned a lot. I connected with a lot of really cool people, and I really, really enjoyed that opportunity. So thank you so much to Giorgio and to Essex Cheese for that opportunity as well.
You're expressing yourself, you're connecting, you're learning, you're just in your element.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see if we could, we're running out of time. So I just see if we can close out with a quick thing here. What tips or advice would you give then? Even come springboard off that, what tips or advice would you give to new mongers to excel in their current role and how one can determine where they want their career to take them?
Mm-hmm.
What would you, Kat, what would you say?
Take every opportunity that comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if your store is having a maker come by to talk to you about their products, be there. If there's an event at the Barnyard, go. Everything that comes your way, take up on it. You're going to meet people, you're going to learn something. And especially with, maker demonstrations, you're going to feel more connected to what you're selling. And I think that, if anything, makes you sell it all that much more passionately. That's my number one thing, just with our mongers, is we're bringing in all these incredible makers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking time out of their day. You should take time out of yours. It's only going to benefit you.
You're getting the information direct from the source.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And them coming to visit your shop is a huge deal a lot of the time. If they're coming from Europe or if they're coming from all over the country, something that I hear a lot is cows don't know about Saturdays. Mm. Cows have no concept of Saturdays. Mm. So if they're taking time off from making cheese to come in and spend time with you, you should be talking to them as much as possible and getting as much information from them as you possibly can, because that is a massive opportunity for
learning. It's an opportunity. It's not like, it's not homework.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you being asked to work off hours. It's really, really beneficial for you to go and just learn. I mean, I think when I was a monger a couple of years ago, I was like super depressed at one point and just like wearing the same flannel shirt like every day for probably 3 weeks. And I was invited to go to a tasting hosted by Parish Hill. And I dragged myself out of bed, put on my flannel and black jeans. And I went to that tasting, and now it's like one of the best connections I've really made with a maker.
Very refreshing to kind of be in that mode outside the being from the counter. And normal work, right? Yeah, it really refreshes and inspires you.
Yeah, it reminds you kind of like, oh my God, I care so much about this. Like, I need to learn and like do as much as I can to like continue doing it.
Speaking your language.
Yeah, sometimes you get caught up in the monotony of retail, and it sometimes you can forget why we do this, and taking those opportunities, talking to those people and seeing the passion in their eyes when they talk to you about their products can really like reignite your passion.
If
I feel that way every year after I go to CMI, it's just like a really nice reminder of why I love this and why we do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And CMI is such a great event to mention, because there's so much of that inspires and can motivate. What resources would you advise new cheese people to tap?
Mm-hmm.
Amelia, you have one off on that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a great segue. I always tell new mongers to participate in CMI.
Okay.
It is one of the best resources that you can give yourself as a new monger, because you're interacting, you're interfacing directly with producers, with sales reps, you're getting your information straight from the source, but you're also networking, you're learning from other people who are either at your level or above your level. It's a great opportunity to make connections, and everyone in that room has something to teach you. Mm-hmm. I never walk into a room without saying, there is something that I can learn from someone in this room today.
Yeah.
It's a great opportunity to hone your skills, figure out what your weaknesses and your strengths are.
Stretch out a little.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, you're not being judged. You're being scored, right?
Yes.
And the panel of people who are scoring you are made up of a lot of different people from all walks of life, all walks of the industry. So you're really getting a holistic picture of what your strengths and weaknesses are. And not only are you able to work on those and improve them for the next CMI, but those actually will help you in your job behind the counter. Mm. You will find that after you do an event like CMI, you are more passionate about your job. You're trying harder. You have improved in a way that is tangible to your coworkers and your boss. So I just always tell people to do CMI, even if you don't do it to win it, do it to learn.
Yeah.
It's the best learning opportunity. And then something else I always tell people is to utilize your peers.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I personally did when I was looking to make the next step in my career was identifying the parts of the industry that I am most fascinated and interested in, and saying, who do I know that does those jobs? Seek out those people, ask them how they got there, how they got to their current position, and then use that information to try to make my next move.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is like very calculated. Everything that I do is very calculated. And it is mostly because the people in the cheese industry are very supportive. They want to see you succeed and they're willing to help you get there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to hold up your end of the bargain too. You have to be willing to put in the work and learn the skills necessary to get to those positions. Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before.
You can't just, can't just fake it. No one's going to just give you something. You kind of got to cut your teeth for a minute.
Yeah. So resources are big though.
Also Cheese State University.
Cheese State University.
It's incredibly comprehensive.
Yeah, and that's
and it's a free resource.
I'm gonna emphasize that's free.
It touches on everything. It's not just Wisconsin cheese. It's the history of cheese. It's cheese science. It's salesmanship. It's cheese care. It's how to serve cheese. It's a really, really great comprehensive resource that is free from Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, and I encourage everyone to get on there.
And Daphne Zeppo's teachingendowment.org, DZTE.org is also something that listeners could apply for. That could also expand their their knowledge and headspace about what's out there.
Cheese Science Toolkit. That's a website that if you are like me and science is not your strong suit, it breaks cheese science down into very easily digestible kind of tidbits. Mm-hmm. It was something that was really helpful for me when I got my CCP.
Yeah, so there's stuff out there, you know, and then there even I think Conte has a scholarship. There may be other AOP or name proprietary name cheese that may follow in in that kind of same formula. I kind of can see that happening in the future where other bigger cheese names may sponsor some work and trips in the coming years.
There's a lot of scholarships out there, and I encourage everyone to apply for them. You would be surprised how many people don't apply for scholarships because they don't want to write an 800-word essay.
Yeah, like, 800 words isn't a lot.
It's not that much.
How many pages is that? What would you say?
Two pages?
Yeah, two pages.
Single space?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's nothing.
I always tell people to apply for as many scholarships because what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is you don't get it.
Yeah.
And also some wisdom
you always learn.
Some wisdom from my mom is that you are who you hang out with. And she told me that when I was a teenager, and that's always stuck with me.
Mm.
Basically, you should align yourself with people that can teach you something, that can elevate you, that people that you admire. Those are the people that are going to support you through your journey in this industry, who are going to help you learn, help you get jobs. It's the concept of being fearlessly friendly.
It's such a friendly industry.
It is.
I was such a quiet person in high school who really had a hard time making friends just because I was shy. And now I feel like in cheese, like I've opened that door and realized like everybody's just doing their best and really kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's, I think, made it a lot easier for me to feel comfortable just talking to someone that I don't really know. Because
also,
then
really
after
funny.
That conversation, I'm going to know them, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, cheese friends we know are the best friends.
Yeah.
Cheese friends are
the best friends.
You know, because we really are all here for the passion of the work.
I mean,
it's you know, like I mentioned much earlier in the show, cheesemongers are not working for the money. They're working because
I'm in it for the money.
I'm in it for the money.
We do this because we love it.
We love it.
There's a kind of a joke that you don't consciously get into cheese. You kind of end up in cheese.
You major in political science and then, you know, however many years later, you work in cheese.
I also have a theory that most cheesemongers are former theater kids. There's something very performative about cheesemongering that is different than working any other type of retail job.
So true. Yeah. So true.
Yep.
That could be its own show right there. But I think we ran out of time for today, but we could talk forever. So Kent and Amelia, I just want to say thank you for joining me today in real life on Cutting the Curd to talk about what's going on with both of you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
No one I'd rather talk to.
It's been an honor.
Oh, wow. Thank you. We'll do it again. I'm sure we'll do it again sometime in the future. So, all right, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you want to find Kat Piquet on Instagram, look up Kat at Kat Dreams of Cheese. And you can find Amelia Dalbero on Instagram at mdalbero and on TikTok at Punk Rock Parmigiano. And you could follow me on Instagram at Sting Chef. And you could follow Cutting the Curd at Cutting the Curd. And also follow Heritage Radio at Heritage_radio. That's a lot of follows we just said there.
Pick one.
You're going to have
one.
To
we'll
rewind
see.
That for those listening. So please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever you listen to your podcast. Also, if you enjoy the show, please give us a 5-star rating. It will mean so much and also really help us broaden our audience. Okay, everyone, thanks for tuning in. And if you love someone, send them cheese.
Yeah.
Heard.
Yes, chef.
Yes, Sting Chef. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, the French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.